very involved. And sometimes even after the...
Potentially resident with the seller's Tudor houses that are near on Lot...
So, I went to a day camp there.
Yeah.
And my grandmother lived there.
Okay.
And we used to go there every Sunday for a Sunday picnic and a swim.
Good.
A lot of connections there.
Good.
Yeah.
So, it was crowded. It was a big event.
Good.
Representative Heffernan was there. She and I. We have 51 assisted living apartments.
That's nice.
Okay, Bill, ready?
Yes. Accommodating our aging population.
Yes. We're all on our way there.
I want to call it a meeting of order for special services. The first thing I want to do is say who is in attendance. Joe Retta, Councilman Weiner, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Hollins, Councilwoman Diller, Smalley, Cartier, and myself, Tim Sheldon. I have not able to attend is Jay Street, Dave Tackett, Chris Bullock, and William Bell, Councilman Bell. With that, and taking notes is Ruby Dillmore. So with this, can we have approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, on today's agenda, we have two items that's printed at the Claymont Library. I've got him marked down, anyway. With no further ado, the update on Claymont Library, who wants to speak about that?
Come on, Jim, put it up there.
Yes.
There we go. With the Blue Rock cornerstone. Grants.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Steve.
My name is Steve Rubel. I'm project administrator with Special Services in charge of managing the Claymont Library project. 4 months ago, we last presented an update on the library. And I'll just give you a short presentation here on the latest pictures of the project and and some more information that we hadn't provided last time. It's been about a year and a half since we broke ground on the library, and certainly it's been far longer since the seeds of the initial vision were planted to build a new library in Claymont.
Steve, can you X out that block?
Yeah. Where's my cursor? Oh, there we go.
Thanks.
Since we last spoke in early June, we've been busy completing the contractual scope of construction for the library and preparing for the task of moving the staff and collections from the existing library. This view here is as you enter the library. It's the reference desk and the grand area at the center of the library. As it stands now, we're nearly complete with the construction punch list. We just have a few more things to do. This is a picture of the circulation desk. It's a pretty nice view there. Another area of the library is the children's area, which I think is going to be really, really popular with the kids. It just has a lot of, playful design to it. And I think it's going to be pretty popular. One of the things I wanted to mention as part of the children's area is the children's desk. I wanted to give a nod to the talent and involvement of the carpentry shop of Special Services, who were able to squeeze in with everything else that they had to do, squeeze in building this desk. They did a fantastic job. The Meganite, which is the material that the desktop is made out of, is actually at the front edge, is actually four separate pieces. And if you go to the library and take a look at it, you got four pieces there. You cannot tell where the seams are. It's just amazing. I don't know how they did it, but they just did a really fantastic job. So I just wanted to mention that. This picture shows the collections finally in place. We worked about 10 hours last Friday and about 12 hours last Saturday to move the collections and the staff from the existing library in Claymont. It was quite a couple days, but it certainly changes the appearance of the library once you get all the books in. That was nice that we finally got that done. This is a nice shot looking back towards the main entrance. You can see the doors there. I have to say, I mean, none of these pictures really do the library justice. You have to go there, and I welcome all of you to do that. It's come together so nicely. When you're out there, it just has such a nice feel to it. I think it's come together even better than our best expectations. Come on out and take a look at it. One of the important things that we wanted to incorporate in the library is the donor brick, and we were able to get those in. Right now, the first installment of the bricks, I think we've got 138 bricks in, and we've got more planned to install. We took the Friends brick, and we put it all the way up at the top. It's the very single brick there towards the entrance. So that was kind of nice to kind of give them a nod. And one of the other things that I think some members of council were interested in, we just finished the walking trail. So that walking trail goes from one end of the site at Darley Road to the other end of the site, kind of winds through the site. You can see the few of the large blue rock boulders. We've scattered those around the site, and they look really nice. In the far back, you can see the monument sign that we installed.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead,
Steve. I actually saw a mother pushing her stroller
already
along this pathway on the other side.
They were just out there the other day, just kind of dressing it up. So that's cool.
And we're on.
I know the community's really going to like that walking trail, and it provides a connection to Woods Haven Cruise Park. So that's nice. We also will be completing the plantings and trees around the site. We have to wait for the first frost, and once that's done, we're going to have lots of cherry trees around the site and a number of other final plantings. At that point, we'll actually have our official COO. We've got our temporary certificate of occupancy now. As I leave you with some of the final shots around the front main facade, I know in the past I've only updated you on the library progress, but as we're nearing completion here, I wanted to review some of the features that the library is going to offer. We have 24 adult computer stations, we've got 6 children stations, and that doesn't even include the catalog stations. We have power and data throughout the library at every chair and table, offering power and internet access to every patron. And if that's not enough, we've got Wi-Fi throughout the library, and I think that Wi-Fi is even going to cover some of the areas right outside of the library. We've installed multiple flat panel displays throughout the library. They'll provide various multimedia capabilities to the patrons and staff. We've got 2 meeting rooms, one large that's dividable into 2 meeting rooms. We have a multifunction room. And we even have private study rooms. I just learned that the state is offering a mobile video conferencing unit to the library, so that's going to be really nice. It has a built-in flat panel display, and that'll provide even more meeting resources for the patrons and staff. We have Apple TV modules, which if you're not familiar with that will allow wireless uploading of content from Apple devices to our flat panel displays. So that's kind of a nice feature. They have that Bear Library, and I know Eric Kuhn, the library manager, likes that. We've got visual display content software, which will allow the staff to provide informational and display content on key flat panel displays for the public. We have a gaming system at the library, and that's gonna offer fitness conscious activities for the patrons. One of the new things that I think is unique to this library and no other one is we have a drive-up window service that will allow patrons to take care of business quickly and easily, such as book drops, late fee payments, and other things that they don't want to enter the library in. So I'll leave you with that final picture in the front. From the library's inception, we've envisioned, designed, and constructed this library with every interested and vested party engaged and involved, from our maintenance staff to community services, the friends of the library, staff, design and construction management team, and others. With the aforementioned involvement, attention to detail, and a superior project team that we had in this project, we now have a state-of-the-art library offering a realm of media content and resources to the patrons of Newcastle County in a setting that offers its own charm and unique character that will provide a sense of community that I believe will ultimately bring to fruition the goals of the original vision of this project. So, I thank you all. I'm just glad to be able to show that to you.
I guess I'm going to go to Mr. Councilman Smiley and Councilman Weiner and just Councilman Carter.
Forgetting the materials inside the library, meaning the books, the CDs, and all, what's our projected completion cost versus what was the estimated completion cost?
Yeah, I received some data from finance here. The estimated cost to complete the project, that's everything that we've tracked, is $11,089,422 and some change. The total project budget is $11,876,771.
Okay. Yep. Any follow up?
Yeah. Just kind of if you could briefly clarify me, what do you mean by everything that you tracked?
All the costs to date.
Because my wife doesn't track her credit card purchases, so she thinks that doesn't count.
Yeah, so even the furniture, the loose things, everything we've paid for in the library, it's all in that number.
So
I can break.
So you tracked everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or you said everything that we tracked. That kind of means there's something that you didn't track.
It raises a question.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and we can break that up depending on what you might want to see broken out. We can do that.
Well, if you can do that, I have a couple other county departments I need you to visit because they can't seem to do that.
Send me an email with what we can.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Is administration in the back?
I think to Mr. Smiley's point, I think Steve's answer is, but the state provides us with lots of equipment, which we don't track the price of that, so it's not included in our numbers.
We don't pay. Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm good with all that.
Half, right, exactly. Half. We get reimbursed for half. Half of that cost actually does go toward the overall project cost.
I'm not going to question how we inflate that, so I'm good.
Okay. Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. I'm very proud and pleased to see this final project. Councilman Carty has every right to be very proud of this, and I would just want to share the pride having represented the area initially. Of course, this was just going to be a stormwater detention basin as part of a village that would connect our park to our train station and to the rehanced Claymont Renaissance Village. This library, it was just a brilliant use of an asset on a location that spurs the Darley Green project, that creates the pride that was lost when Claymont High School was torn down. And it will be iconic, if it isn't already, as you view Pierce DuPont High School as you go down Van Buren Street. This, as we go down Green Street and it opens, and Green Street opens up, you'll see this library and that pillar with the library, and it'll just make such a statement that we'll all be proud that future generations will be able to enjoy this. And thanks for adding the pathway.
Sure, absolutely.
Just to let you know, Councilman Powers has been here, just to have him duly noted. Councilman Cornier, and
yes, all the comments Councilman Weiner made were right on target.
I want to just kind of flesh out some other features and, you know, iconic qualities that this library has. First of all, it has a sort of town-like feel to it with the clock tower amenity that or feature that's been built onto the building, so that when you're going down Green Street north, once that's completed, this will provide that civic building, elevated civic building presence in the midst of the Darley Green project to become that keynote civic building that is, adds to the town-like quality of the project. It's fully pedestrian-friendly in every sense. Plus, it has 80 parking spaces, so we won't have constraints with parking like we currently have with the library site. Historically speaking, it's very interesting because the actual Claymont Library began literally just about a block to the east in the old stone school building. So we're coming back home for Claymont Library. So this facility is opening in its much improved form right in the same vicinity. And I think a lot of people in Claymont really are very, very happy about that. And on the building itself, besides the clock tower feature, on the gable side to the right, the plaque you can't see. I don't know if you have a greater detail of that, but that is actually a you know, relief, and it is the symbol of the Friends of the Claymont Library, which is an open book surmounted by a phoenix bird on fire, because the Claymont Library at one time burned, and it was people in the community who rallied together to save it as a civic institution for Claymont. It burned when it was in the community center. It was under threat of closure, and those people got together and saved their library institution, which goes back to 1929. So that is a feature on it that I hope people, when you get a chance, you'll look it over. The other thing that is in this building on the clock tower itself, and I know we had lengthy wranglings about this, but we did extract huge amounts of granite out of this site in order to make this building feasible. And we took one of the granite boulders and we had it carved into a cornerstone. So that dark stone that you see on the clock tower down on the base, that's actually a cornerstone made out of granite extracted from the site with the opening date of 2013 on the cornerstone. So it has, and then inside we have up in the elevated portion, the center of the library, there is a painting undertaken by local kids in the area, and I don't know all the details of that, that emblazons that wall in the center of the library up high. So has a lot of very interesting artistic features. It's very town-like, and I think it will become a very iconic building for New Castle County and for the greater Claymont community.
Councilman Moretta?
Thank you. A couple questions. You said the projected cost was about $8 million, seven something?
The estimated cost of the project is $11,089,422.
Where's the $8 million from?
I don't remember anyone saying $8 million.
I thought you did.
Wayne Barrett, Acting General Manager. I think, and I focused on the project budget was $11.8 million.
Okay. Is there any overage? Is it what's the percentage of overage?
Currently, we are within the project budget of 11.876.
So you're within the 10% plus or minus.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We hope to be 800,000.
That's good. That's a good. It's a good contract. Keep an eye on things.
Councilman Cartier.
Now in that total global budget, does that include a estimate of the land donation?
Yes.
How does that figure into
that? That includes.
And what is that estimate? The land was donated on this site.
I think it was 700,000. I think it's around that figure.
Okay.
Was included in the overall project cost.
But in fact, that's a donated parcel.
Based on the appraisal of the land, yeah.
Hey, is it fair to ask anybody, you don't have to come with no answer, because everybody's talking like $8 million, was that the bricks and sticks part of it? Do you know?
Yeah, the direct construction cost, I can get that figure to you, but you know, when you pull out all the soft costs and everything else, there's a direct construction cost, and that's certainly...
The only reason why I say that is they always have a prevailing wage fight. And when you come up with $11 million, but you can probably say three of it, it's like you said, has nothing to do with what they call, quote-unquote,
yeah, I mean, don't write it down, but I think the direct construction cost was around $7 million.
Right. I just like to have that on the record, because everybody wants to fight and say, well, I can say 40% get away prevailing wage. I think 40% is everything else but the building.
Yeah, there's a
lot of it. It's a lot. I just, you know, nobody remembers that. Oh, I can save. There's no way you can save that.
Yeah, I got it.
There's no way. I said my piece. Anybody else? Council Weiner, and then or General Major, Mayor Merritt.
Thanks, Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager. I'd just like to say that there's a lot of people did a lot of great work on this, friends and community. But I can't sing the praise of Steve Rubel enough. He is a truly dedicated county employee. I just want to thank him.
Nice.
Councilman Warner?
The words you used shows to me, Steve, that you understand the magnitude of this project, this success, and have a true appreciation for its contribution to our community. This combined with the four stories of circular houses taken as an element from London will create something that people will come from all around to see. I'd like again to ask you if you would electronically send the photos to me.
Sure.
I want to post them and share them for archival purposes.
Okay.
Thank you.
With that, anything else from council? John?
I would just like to extend my sincere gratitude to the members of this county council who, in a vast majority vote, supported the capital funding for this project. And I can tell you that you've done a tremendous service to the Claymont community with that capital budget vote. And I always will have great gratitude for that. And I also want to offer all my thanks to the Steve Rubel and the team that project managed this and did a wonderful job with it. And I know we had some challenges with the site, but I think the product speaks for itself and your management capability. And thank you very much on behalf of myself and Claymont community.
Easier than your sore line.
All right, with that, we'll go to exchange topics then. Thank you very much, Steve. We have our update for the department's telematics program.
Well, I don't have any pretty pictures, so that is not exciting, but I do have a prop I'll share with you guys in a little bit, too.
Can you tell us what telematics means?
Okay, I'm going to get to that, yep.
Okay, great.
Thanks. For a little over a year now, we've been using a fleet management service that utilizes GPS and telematics. And to answer your question, Councilman, most of us have heard of or at some point have used GPS, but the term telematics was new to me and maybe for some of you, but really it's simply integration of telecommunications and informatics, which is just simply the science behind the information. And I'm not going to get into the science of that information today, but this is going to be a high-level overview of the program to date. With our shrinking budgets and rising operating costs, it was really important for us to find new ways to fine-tune and better manage our expenses, identify patterns of driving behavior that create and offer the greatest opportunity of risk,
and to eliminate inefficiencies within our fleet and how we ran the fleet from an operating standpoint. Our selection of a fleet management vendor was easy, knowing that our friends in Dover already have an existing relationship. We chose Network Fleet. They are recently purchased by Verizon, so they're part of a Verizon company. It's a web-based application. It's a simple plug-and-play type installation, 24-hour roadside assistance. And if you want to see your own demo and kind of navigate through the website, you can go to networkfleet.com. It's out there to look at and see what kind of a service they offer. I'll get into more of those a little bit later. But again, we piggybacked off the state's contract for favorable terms and pricing. And while we were conducting our search, we did compare prices and service of others in the business. And when the smoke cleared at the end of the day, Network Fleet, from an overall whole package and existing relationship, they came out to be the ones on top, simply because we had the resources and others that are using this service, local companies and other fleets. It made it easier for us to have that contacts those who overcame the obstacles when they first introduced the program. So it just helped us to go with Network Fleet. These are some of the others who currently use it. The state of Delaware just outfitted the remaining 500 cars that they have in their fleet. DelDOT and DRBA both use this service of fleet management company. When the units are activated, and here's a prop I was telling you about. This is all it is right here. When the units are activated, it connects right into the OBD port into the existing car. So it's hidden, it's under the dash, it's not visible, there's no antenna to try to cover up or hide or get into the dashboards. It's all contained in that one little unit, but they continuously collect a very robust amount of information, and we're still learning what it's capable of. And how to use, effectively use the system providing for us. But for now, we're taking a very patient, calculated approach to understanding what's available to us. And these are just some of the tools that it offers to us right now. Idle time reports, speed violations, geofencing. We are enrolled in DMSV remote emissions programs, so any vehicle equipped with this unit does not have to go back to DMV to get a registration each year. They remotely download the information from the unit itself, and DMV accepts or declines the emissions for that particular vehicle, sends a registration right back to our transportation department, and we affix the sticker. So it saves some labor time from having the driver of that vehicle take it down to DMV, wait in line, get your sticker, and put it back on your car. So it's saving us some labor hours there as well. We are still introducing the system to the workforce from the top down with a series of informal information QA type sessions with all the sections. It's important that we roll this out at a very deliberate pace just so there's a complete understanding, but we are confident that if we follow this methodology that you see right there, that we can really begin to integrate these telematics into our current business policies and guidelines. That's a whole There's a lot of moving parts to all of these, and they're all having to work together at one time. But with Wayne's help, with the help of Big HR, we're making great progress, again, at a very well-measured pace. Some of the benefits of the fleet management service: improve driver safety, again, reduce our operating expenses, improve the vehicle maintenance, improved accountability, and substantiates the whereabouts of our employees of falsely accused in traffic infractions. I don't know, Wayne, if you wanted to share a story or two, but where this actually did help some of our workforce.
Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager of Special Services. Occasionally, we will get calls about somebody watching, seeing a county vehicle do something that they felt to be inappropriate. Sometimes that's accurate. Sometimes that's not accurate. Never being on site, you have to take a lot of work to figure out what happens. The councilman's not here, but I got a call one day from a councilman who got a call from a constituent about one of our vehicles who was up in Pennsylvania allegedly driving recklessly and speeding. I said, okay. Thank goodness it was a telematics vehicle. It gives you the longitude and latitude exactly what's going on, where it's at. I think when it was all said and done, because the councilman got back to all the information and got back to the constituent, I think the information was relayed to the constituent from a family member, and I think if they really want to know why a county vehicle was out of the state, there was a very legitimate reason. It was one of our big trucks that was going back up for some repair work, and actually being trailed by another vehicle to provide transportation for the driver. But I could tell what the speed was for that vehicle all the way from the time it pulled out of the parking lot till it got up to its location. So for those, as I tell the employees, okay, yeah, everybody hates to be tracked, you know, everything they do, but sometimes I can work with them.
So for round one, we'll call it, we started with 100 units. We put 80 of those in the vehicles in our department, and 20 were randomly distributed among other departments as well within the county. All 100 units were online and live by November 2012. We began collecting baseline data with a focus on speed, idling, and destination optimization. That's just simply getting from point A to B in the most, the ideal route, instead of taking some side routes to wherever they might go, pharmacy, Wawa, wherever it is. To get a true picture of where the extent of our opportunities lie, we need to get a natural, uninhibited driving patterns. So compare the information with our desired results. So in July of 2012, we sent notice to the employees that this is coming, it's on its way. That was the communication that it's coming out. From August to the end of May, we collected that data. And in June of 2013, we re-administered a revised version of SOP 17.1 that included the information of the telematics expectations. The system allows us to create semi-custom reports and alerts that feed directly into our email system. It depends on who's designated to receive whatever email. So from June until yesterday, we've been using the alerts for speed, idle time, and geofencing. If the alert's received by the section manager for one of his or her employees, that operator is brought in, shown the alert, and they're educated and recounted on what the expectation should be to curb that behavior. What I have here is, I'm almost done. So I have a couple of screenshots I wanted to share with you. This is an actual, if you logged in and you're a section manager, this is an actual shot of what you're gonna see when you pull up your group of vehicles. On the left-hand side, you can see there's a whole list of, it's cut off a little bit, but a whole list of the vehicles that we're monitoring right now. This happens to be a day in the life of vehicle 4519, which is one of our special services pool cars. But all the plots and pins that you see throughout Newcastle County, those are, every 2 minutes, the satellite gives us a ping for location, direction, speed, engine status, where they are, if they're stopped, if they're underway, or if they're idling. So we have a lot of information that's given to us. This next slide looks busy from, if you look at the bar at the top where you see the word ignition toward the left-hand side towards the top, gives us the ignition status. The red dots, the red square, it's underway. The green circles, green squares means it's stopped. The blue dots are what we don't want to see. That is a succession of blue positions indicating the car is sitting in idle state.
Got a lot of them.
We do have a lot of those, but there's good reason why this vehicle was doing that. When the alerts come in, the driver that particular day has the opportunity to explain where they were, what they were doing. So right now, the alert threshold is set at 30 minutes. So if after 30 minutes, you're still continuing to idle, the alert shoots in the mailbox, we're brought back in, and again, it's discussed, and we try to communicate that that's not what we're trying to do at this point. This is interesting, the slide right here. So before June, I started measuring the average of the number of events, of 30-minute events on a regular basis. So before June, we were receiving about 129 of those events, those 30-minute events, 129 per week. Since we reintroduced the SOP, it's dropped to 71. So it's almost a 45% reduction. Even with that said, 84% of those alerts are from our sewers department, the sewer maintenance department. And those vehicles, because of the nature of what they do, are supposed to idle. There are jet trucks or jet vacs. So I have another slide that I didn't include here, but it shows the flip of the distribution of those alerts from all other special services departments, parks, building maintenance, the engineering department, how that flipped to where it's more of an ideal, true indicator of where the idling takes place. So we're okay where we are now, and even the distribution. We have plenty of opportunity. Yes, sir.
Bill Powers, I didn't see nobody else.
Yeah, I mean, with the idling that you've reduced, what are they shutting the cars down, or what was it, other vehicles? I mean, I understand, you know, trucks, some of them have to run, they got cranes and whatever else on them. Were we running 50% more in idling just because they were on a job? How did you reduce it?
In June is when we introduced the revision to the SOP, kind of communicating what our expectations were.
What were they doing before is what
letting
I'm
the car run. Unfortunately, they're letting the car run. Go ahead.
Wayne Merritt, I'm the general manager. And I don't want to cast dispersion on any section or anything, but let's just take a section. If somebody has a pickup truck and they go to a park and do policing at the park, we certainly expect that vehicle should be turned off while they're out policing. Before this, unless we came up and would catch somebody, we had no idea whether it was running or not running. We wanted to believe the best thing. So now everybody who has one of these vehicles know they're being monitored. So the fact that it's certain vehicles, I mean, we've got pickups that may have emergency equipment that's on a road. You know, we have trucks and plant ops that have cranes on them. Our jet trucks obviously are running. If they're not running, they're not performing.
They're not doing it.
So it's not going to go to zero. We're taking the opportunity for those vehicles where people should not be idling and sitting in air conditioning, theoretically, or whatever the issue is, to minimize the cost of can.
And that, I guess, after you counsel them, pointing out what vehicle they're sitting in.
Yes. They start to become believers in the system.
Yeah.
Councilman Retta.
Thank you. I don't know which Paul or Wayne can answer this, but does this go for the code officers and inspectors too, the cars that they ride?
This, as we expand the system, we're doing 100 last year. We currently got 100 in order. In the next 2 years, we're doing 100 each year. The goal is for, yes, ultimately everybody will have one. The discussion now is, well, how come I got one and he doesn't have one? Well, it's a budget issue, that's all I can tell you. You know, we're not trying to discriminate against anybody, we want everybody to have one. I've got one in my business. So. And I made sure I had the first one because I had the first question.
So eventually all of them are going to have.
Oh, yes.
Councilman Cordier and then Councilman Weiner.
Well, now you're talking about budgets. I mean, obviously we have to capitalize and invest in this system. Are you anticipating that you're going to recoup your cost and beyond your cost for this, yeah, with this type
sure,
of monitoring?
We have a slide. Really, slide on.
Okay, good.
I just, yes, sir. Just before we leave, that's how we're reducing our emissions, is by shutting them off.
Yeah.
I just making
sure. I think every gallon of fuel burned is 19.2 pounds of CO2 particulate.
Yeah. So yeah, if they're idling, they're,
right,
yeah, you're better off
burning money and
you're better CO2 off idling a diesel than you are a gas car.
Councilman
Weiner?
Yes.
Do you have some sort of behavior reinforcement contemplated?
Yes.
You mean discipline?
Well, I was thinking rewards, too.
We're into that, too.
Yeah. We're going to pull one on your car.
That's okay.
If I could just go off script just a little bit. As I mentioned earlier, nobody wants to be followed this way. And one of the things that it deals with is speeding. And as I explained to everybody, we go around, we talk to all the sections to make sure that everybody understands why we're doing this. It's not to get anybody in particular. But it really is a culture change on how you drive your vehicle. And one of the complaints were that people were, you know, blowing their horn when you're doing the speed limit. And we're not being unrealistic because we want people to be safe. And I'm the first to recognize when you get on I-95 down there by Basin Road, it's about survival. So you got to do what you can do. And would be an affirmative defense if you had to exceed the speed limit to get to the right-hand lane. But eventually, you got to make it to the right-hand lane. You can't ride length of 95 or 495 in the left-hand lane. That's the problem. One of the suggestions that came up, and we've implemented it, is we're putting stickers on all the telematics.
This wasn't planned either. I just happen to have this with me.
This vehicle is being monitored. Now, some people say, well, I can't go on every one of them. I said, because I don't want to be dishonest, because if you're not monitored and they call me, I don't know what you're doing. So we're being very upfront about it. And here's the thing, if you haven't thought about it, because the little thing that really gets connected into the vehicle, if you've seen the commercials for Geico or State Farm or whatever, you can get a 30% reduction because you're putting that under the vehicle. They're under test modes. As I tell them, I can't tell you the exact date or time, but it's no different than the equipment I used to use for the Mac machines. I hated the Mac machines when they first came out because I wanted to deal with the teller. And then eventually they managed to correct my behavior by having three Mac machines, one teller, and a line of 12 people, so I had to make a tough decision.
I need to put them on my tractor.
Eventually, you're going to be paying that 30% premium if you take one of those in your car. So I said, so guys, let's just get with the program and get ahead of the power curve.
Then Councilman Powers?
I mean, that should help, really, even on maintenance brakes and stuff. Because, you know, if people are driving fast as they can and they're throwing the brakes on, that's just more brakes you got to replace.
This gives us jackrabbit starts and quick stops.
Yeah.
All right.
This last screenshot is an example of a geofence. It's simply creating a boundary around an area or an object. Or this is a geofence around Newcastle County. So if anybody leaves the county, I know about it right away. So if it happened, there was an accident on 301 a few weeks ago, and I got a ping that a couple of our trucks were cruising around through Maryland there after Elkton. You go in the news, and there's a big pile of them. They got to avoid it, so they're out of the county for a second, and they're back in the county for a second. So, no harm, no foul there. You can also dial it down too if you want to put a geo fence around the parks or pump stations. You can do the same thing. So you can do inclusions and exclusions. If you don't want anybody to leave an area, you can put it around there. If you don't want anybody to enter an area, you can put it around there, and you can track if they enter or they leave. So, you know, what does this all mean for us, and how has it better served us as managers to manage the expenses of the fleet? Now, these results you have here are just for special services, and it just addresses the low-hanging type of fruit, because as Wayne mentioned, it's still a passive program. We're not enforcing a discipline type thing yet. We're still in a long period
or of a rewards program.
Or a rewards program. So we're still in the education.
Well, yes, sir. Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager. There's always an asterisk. As I've told everybody, we are not going to hound anybody for progressive discipline for speeding or whatever the violation is. But that does not negate the possibility if some egregious violation occurs. That will be in place. We've not had any egregious violations.
So we've been pretty good so far, actually. Again, we still have some work to do, but we're really excited about the opportunities that are ahead of us. Idle time, when compared to the hours sat, hours of operation, sat at about 60%. So, 60% of the time that those vehicles were in operation, they sat in the idle state. It's a little misleading again, because as I mentioned, some of the cars, a large portion of our vehicles have to idle a little bit as you really do. But since June, we've reduced it down to 50%. If you annualize those reductions, we're talking about 4,300 fewer hours of idling, 3,000 gallons of fuel not consumed, $10,000 of avoided fuel expenses, and close to 58,000 pounds of CO2 emissions that were not emitted as a result of those reductions. So again, we have some work to do. A 50% idle rate is not what the industry average really wants you to achieve. It's closer to 20. So you can see we have some opportunity, but we'll get there. We'll find the right balance of where we need to be. From a speed standpoint, prior to the implementation of the SOP going back out again, our average high speed traveled from point A to point B
We catch every, again, we catch every 2-minute ping. We have over 1.5 million pings to go by. Our average speed was almost 51 miles an hour. Post 6/213, we're at 48. Doesn't sound like a whole lot, but that actual 2% reduction, or 2 mile an hour reduction, is a 2% reduction in our fuel costs, and that's estimated at about $4,200 per year. Again, as Wayne mentioned, we have planned for the next 3 years to purchase an additional 100 per year, and outfit all the non-ag public, all the non-ag non-public safety built safety cars, for the most part, until they choose to embrace the program as well. So that's really it. I think, Councilman, you had the question about the return on investment.
Yeah.
Somewhere within year 3, we will recapture our expenses and begin realizing our savings. So within year 3, if we are able to really dial in where we should be from an industry standard standpoint. So
that's
before we purchase the last 100 as well.
Yeah. Councilman Smalley, then Councilman Warren.
A couple of things. One, I've been through this, not with this device, but with a couple of different companies for their efficiency purposes and everything else. And I'm going to put this out there. I would hope that you've already anticipated this and may have already come across it. Whereas, especially when you change and put in a specific speed restriction, driving restriction, you will have some employees whose work product will go up, some will go down. The leapfrog analogy is, well, the one that went down, now they're sticking it to us, they're not doing their job, when in actuality, they've adjusted their work pace to what you want, whereas before that, and the others may be. So just, because right, I've seen it, I've been there, I've been a part of it, the whole nine yards.
We've also provided charts that show you travel at 65 for a 30 mile destination versus 65, you save 2.5 minutes. So the goal is to communicate to the folks that you're not saving a whole lot of time. It is in your head.
I keep that up here when I'm driving down Route 1. It's not worth the cost per mile when I get a ticket. So, and the only other thing is, I heard relative to this that there's a, I don't know what you'd call it, dead spot or something on Merlin Avenue that created a glitch. So where the data was skewed to make it appear that a vehicle was going like 80 miles an hour or something.
We had one state body truck. What happens is, again, the science behind the information, there's an algorithm. The machine pulls the actual data from the vehicle for speed. It pulls the tach, the transmission, the tire rotation, and the RPMs, and it runs it through an algorithm. If the speedometer's off, it's going to throw the whole thing off. So what we found, we did some road testing, some live road testing with that, with a handheld GPS. I was behind the desk with the system and actually in a car for a subsequent test, and we got the reading. So it was high. The speedometer in the car, the truck never went over 69 miles an hour. The speedometer said 77. So there's some calibration issues there we have to address on a singular type occurrence, but we've already got buy-in from the public safety department to calibrate random vehicles for us to make sure we're still on point. But over the 1.5 million readings we've gotten, we've only had 3 that have raised some questions to this point.
Yeah, but just as you said, it's not meant to be proactive disciplinary. I just urge, like I said, I've been down the road several times just to investigate before you pounce. That's all.
We want to
get more buy. You'll get more buy-in that way.
We want to look at patterns of driving behavior, not singular type incidents. You saw back a few slides when we had the idle time.
Yep.
We had that spike when it was super hot for those 2 weeks. We didn't even look at those. I mean, that was a single event. We're not going to stick anybody for that. We don't want anybody to sit outside anymore. They're doing blacktop to sweat and have heat strokes.
Have they asked if they can stick one of these in the air conditioning for your office yet?
Yeah.
Just curious.
No,
see how much it's idle.
Yeah. Well, the question usually is, you're trying to mess with us, and I said, listen, the first one was pretty fine.
Yeah. And he has got a heavy foot, too.
Councilman
Weiner, and then Councilman Powers, and then Councilman Cordier.
This chart shows the annual delta on ROI and really answered the question, so thank you.
Councilman Powers?
Just with what was brought up, I think Councilman Smiley, Is this information be passed through the cellular service?
It's twofold. One goes through GPS antenna, one goes through cell. The speed goes through a cellular antenna, the GPS.
Because if you get into a lot of my district, the GPS is going to work and the cell isn't going to work. You know, GPS always works pretty much.
Yeah, the thing about the GPS.
What's that?
Or the cell towers down.
But it would be on the trucks as the inspectors and.
Yeah, for the other.
And, you know, you wouldn't get a really good read. I mean, you try to, right now, the leaves will fall in another month and we'll have better cellular service. But right now, you can't make a call on my road till you get 2 miles away from my house.
You have to switch to satellite phone service. Get all your constituents to do that.
No, we're working on another tower.
Councilman Cordier?
Yeah, thank you. This shows excellent potential for return on investment, and I see, you know, down the road, direct fuel savings for us. Secondly, a safer, hopefully less incidents with accidents due to speeding, those kind of things. And then the last thing, you know, for me, I think it's really important for all of us, you know, older diesel vehicles put out a huge amount of particulates, which are a leading cause of asthma and other respiratory problems. That's why we got an F from the American Lung Cancer Society for air quality in the area. So what we're doing with this is also contributing to better air quality for everybody. And I think that's the thing that we should really put out there to the public, that, you know, these kind of innovative use of technology can give us multiple benefits to the taxpayers, better air quality, you know, and that alone for me is good to, you know, have an investment like this.
Good point.
Anybody else on the subject? Well, I'd like to thank you very much, all, and thank Special Services. We're going to go on to anything other on not only today's topic, but Special Services itself. General Manager, please.
Somebody had a question. We're prepared to answer. It came up last week about waste hauling.
What was the rates for
waste hauling?
Yes.
Mike Harris is prepared to speak to that.
I would like to.
Okay. Mike Harris, Special Services.
And I did go by there today, and Weavers is pumping into Smyrna again, Kent County, this afternoon.
Well, your request came at a really good time for me, because I got contacted by Kent County about 3 weeks ago. And Kent County is trying to change their septic rates right now. Right now, Newcastle County's rate is $70.56 per 1,000 gallons discharged at our site. Kent County is charging $57.12 right now per 1,000 gallons, and $75 for threes. And they're proposing to raise it to somewhere around 79, 86, to 85, 86, depending on which site you dump.
The reason I say it, and I think, I forget who it was afterwards that worked for the county but lives in Mistyville, there's a lot of haulers that are pumping, and they're starting at the canal or above and going to Smyrna. Huh.
They are cheaper now.
Yeah, and that's when you brought it up with it going down on what you were bringing, when they were bringing in finance, saying that the numbers went down. When we go 24/7, if you go the pump station they pump into, you're on 13, right, or Garrison Lake's on your right. Look to the left, you'll see a truck dumping. I went by there, Weavers was dumping the biggest truck they got into Kent County.
Well, Kent told me they haven't raised their rates, and we raise our rates every year based on what our cost is for BOD and suspended solids, just like we do for the sewer.
See, that might have been the reason we lost some, too.
But they haven't had a rate increase in 7 years, so they're losing money, and that's why they want to come.
Well, the employee that I talked to lived in Mistyville. That means he had to run by, and he ran past Odessa going to Smyrna to dump.
The only approved site in Newcastle County is at the airport road pump station.
Well, you know, maybe we ought to be looking at that, because where are most of our septics?
True, but this is you have to find a good spot that can handle.
I mean, Kirkwood would make more sense than hauling it all the way up there. I mean, that's probably why they're all set. They may not even at $9 more, they still may go south because it's a lot better road than going up this way.
And fuel costs as well. Yeah.
I'm just saying, if you want to recoup some of, I mean, I know we dumped and hauled, we dumped it into the one that runs to Middletown. We pumped and hauled it. And you can, there's got to be a way to monitor it somehow.
The mayor and acting general manager of special services, the airport road pump station is specifically designed for purposes of accepting both grease and other effluent.
Yeah.
It then is most easily forced main right now.
Well, I can see grease not going, you know, south, but some of the sewage could probably go right into Water Farm 1. We're not at capacity.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that ought to be looked into.
We can take
care of that. Yes, Councilman McCarty and then Smiley.
Well, I think he was first.
That's right. Go ahead.
Yes. Not something to address necessarily this year, but I would like to request that, you know, another update on Brandywine 100 sewer, maybe going into new year. We will be in 2014, and we're kind of come up against, you know, deadlines maybe with our compliance. I know we've gone into suspension and deactivated the Governor Prince project, just to see where we might be in the redesign effort at that point. Maybe in January.
Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, just to drop back just real quick, because I heard your comment, I believe I heard it correctly. Our fees are basically, they're calculated to cover our cost. That's what we're doing.
That sounds like they're all raising.
And they're, look, they got a lot. That's, they went cheap for the longest time. They lose money. We don't do that with our taxpayers. That's one thing about the sewers. We try not to lose them too much, but we have. You know. We raise them up the following year to make sure it's compliant. All right, anything else? Anything with the public?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion's made, second to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Very good.
Hey, Wayne, you got a second?
There's no meeting. But this is